Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We are here on a very cloudy, rainy Thursday morning, not our usual day for doing the show. I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Cretella. I'm happy to have you on, Michelle. This is a very important subject. And, of course, half the time I forget to mute my stupid YouTube thing when I start the show, so I just did that. Now it's muted. But we are good to go. Dr. Cretella, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And we've been having a little bit of an echo issue this morning. We're just going to have to deal with it. But I wanted to start off by asking you, and this morning's show is going to be a little bit shorter than normal, but when we tell children that their gender is a choice, what are we doing to them?
You know, essentially, especially when this is done young, I mean, we're doing this to kids when they're 2-3 years old, you're gaslighting them, all right? Listen, one of the most basic physical realities that we first learn as kids is our physical bodies. If we can't trust our bodies to tell us who we are at that most basic level, a boy or a girl, then who or what can kids trust? You know, it just destroys their reality testing.
Well, you know, and I mentioned to you, I wanted to play a little clip from Monty Python. Hopefully we don't get the episode dinged for playing this clip, but since you're an academic professional, this is a discussion of this. So this is, let me see here. I'm going to see if I can get this going properly here.
Stan, come on about women, Stan. I want to be one. What? I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Sam?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. I've got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Yeah, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Roman, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression. Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
Why are you all about that?
And that really just summarized it there, you know, and I had to do the audio strange. I forgot to share the thing differently. But, you know, that really summarizes the situation. It's the struggle against reality, isn't it?
Perfectly, beautifully stated, yes. I mean, and we can see that now, especially since the HHS memo leaked that, oh, horrors, the Trump administration is upholding the medical definition of sex in federal law. How outrageous is that? We actually have academics responding to that saying, oh, no, sex isn't binary. No, sex doesn't. It's too simplistic to relate it to chromosomes. These are PhDs and MDs stating this. And so I actually spearheaded a letter applauding the administration for supporting science, right? I mean, who would have thought that we would need physician groups to come together along with lawyers and policy organizations to say, yes, sex is binary. It is determined at conception by your sex chromosomes. How we have fallen.
Well said. So now people today, liberals, millennials especially, I would imagine, today actually believe that if you change your clothing, that actually changes your sex. Is that true?
They probably don't think of it that way, but yes, that's essentially it. The entire transgender movement is based on I am because I say I am. I am what I am because I say so. They're actually fighting for the right to call themselves non-binary or the opposite sex or whatever one of the 72 and ever-growing list of genders are.
I call it the trans QWERTY agenda because,
sure,
you know,
that's right.
QWERTY, yes. Because the top row of the keyboard, you know.
Yes, that sums it up. You know, it's I am what I am because I say so, and you must believe me. And if I want to have chemicals or surgery to alter my appearance, you must pay for it. That's what we're being faced with.
Right, and it's always somebody else has to pay for it, and you know, and we're oppressing them if we don't, and you know, and you know, one thing, and I'm just going to say this really quickly, but one thing that really gets me about these types of people is they want everybody else to lie to cater to their delusion, and you know, it's like, okay, being a man and a father, I know what it's like to be a man and a father, and a woman going around in drag, wearing a bow tie and, you know, shaving her head is not a man. Sorry, ladies, you're not men. And, you know, and they have no concept of what it's like to be men, furthermore, and vice versa. You know, cutting your genitalia off doesn't make you a woman. You can't give birth. In fact, I even got banned from Facebook for 5 days for posting something about, you know, binary gender.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, they're actually actively censoring us for even daring to tell the truth about this. You know, and I've got documents from Planned Parenthood, from the Jaffa meetings from the 1960s, showing that they were going to do this whole agenda, you know, and people don't even believe that, you know, that this stuff is real. I'm just going to show this Jaffa memo on screen here really quickly so that people can see this. But encourage increased homosexuality here is one of them. And we can see in compulsory education. We can also see educate for family limitation, for fertility control agents in the water supply. And I'm not going to segue into this really far, but, you know, phytoestrogens such as in plastics and soy is a huge part of this. And soy was used in the monasteries in Asia to calm the men's sex drive down. And then we see, they're feeding this to the general population. And the U.S. and the FDA lists soy as a poison over 250 times. Why the heck are they putting this poison that's a known phytoestrogen in all of the processed foods now? So how is all of this cognitive or psychological abuse on children?
So basically what the activists, and by activists I'm including those in white coats with stethoscopes and therapists who are on the bandwagon, they are not telling us that children's gender identity is learned. Little children age 3 are just figuring out whether they are a boy or a girl. They're just figuring out what biological sex means to their bodies. It's not until they're age 7 that they understand sex is permanent, and that if a man gets done dressed up in drag, he doesn't actually become a woman. So when you have these drag queen story hours for preschoolers, you start giving them, you go on Amazon.com and look up transgender books for kids. There are a bazillion options, starting with picture books. There's one about a teddy bear who is so sad and unhappy. He starts out with a bow tie and the name of Teddy, and by the end of the book, he's got a girly name, and he's moved bow tie to his head, and he's a barrette, and now he's happy. So this is how we are really, it's psychological and cognitive abuse. We're disturbing children's normal psychological development, their normal gender identity development.
You know, and you can see that this is a clear social engineering agenda, and the way that they've rolled it out in the last 5 or 6 years, and how it's become ubiquitous across all the movies, all the TV shows, all of the media. It's in all the magazines at the same time. I mean, if this was an organic movement, you wouldn't see the broad, sudden adaptation of it across all of the major media. I mean, you know, I'm an expert at researching and exposing social engineering movements, and this one has all of the key signs behind it. So, can people be born in the wrong body?
If you subscribe to reincarnation, and I don't say that to disparage any Buddhists or Hindus or anyone who believes in reincarnation. I state it that way to emphasize that there is no science to demonstrate that anyone is, quote, born in the wrong body. From the moment of fertilization, barring the rare disorder of sex development or a mother being exposed to testosterone, from the moment of fertilization, if that embryo has a Y chromosome, it will proceed down the male pathway, and there's no way you will get a feminized brain in that male embryo or fetus. And the reverse is true for the embryo if it is female, meaning lacking a Y chromosome.
And we could probably segue way into this, but basically it's a choice or some psychological trauma, essentially, that appears to get people to think they're the opposite. You know, and I interviewed this guy from Australia, Mark Janssen, a couple of months back, who was a victim of pedophiles on the beach at 8 years old, and he became a homosexual, and now he speaks out against it all and what happened to him and how he became what he is. You know, so it's probably some traumatic experience or something. But so how has the liberal education system distorted reality and even people's ability to identify what gender is? And what are we telling our children when we say that, you know, changing the clothes changes sex?
So I'll unpack that a little bit. I would say the social engineering began in the 1950s, when Dr. John Money and his associates, these were sexologists who wanted to justify doing surgery to transsexual men who thought they were women. And Dr. Money and his fellow sexologists and surgeons working with him said, well, you know, surgery and hormones don't change sex. We have to say we're treating something. So out of thin air, they insisted that people have a gender and a sex, and that they were treating gender, the person's internal sex identity. So this is entirely made up, and it is that fundamental alteration of the word gender that has us in this mess. So we did talk a little bit about how this disrupts the normal cognitive and psychological development of young children. It's also highly dangerous for preteens and adolescents, because they're approaching that point in their social development and psychological development when they're trying on new roles. And they're fighting for independence, trying to figure out who they are. And what we are doing, as you said, transgenderism it's being promoted everywhere. Hollywood, in schools, on social media, it's ubiquitous. And so now, from an adolescent's point of view, this is the thing to be. This is, and in studies, adolescent subjects have literally said, you know, it's easier to come out trans than it is LGB. And if you remember being a teenager, right, all the usual teen angst, so a little depression, anxiety.
Junior high is the worst time of most people's lives, you know.
Absolutely. And transgender has become so in vogue that kids can literally go from being isolated to having a core group of friends and be at the height of popularity. So it's really an unfortunate mess.
Well, you know, I want to point out here that gender, the root word is genesis or generate, gen, you know, which is to produce, to make something. And so when you're generating, when you're creating life, there's two. There's male and there's female. And it's really, you know, the core of the whole argument of the whole gender debate can be broken down right in the word itself.
Correct.
You know?
And that's why every social engineering movement begins with linguistic engineering, as you know.
Yeah. It's got to be, you got to always start with the sophistry and the spin and then make people question reality. And then, you know, it's especially based on getting people to lie to themselves. And if you believe in following truth, you know, that doesn't bide for us, you know? And, you know, and it's like, I've actually had people that had transgender friends or whatever, and they said, well, we want to come and visit you, but my girlfriend thinks she's a guy, and you're going to have to call her a he. And I'm like, sorry, I refuse to lie for you. Oh, well, then we're not coming. Well, then fine. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie for this person's delusion. Sorry.
Right,
you know, and
right.
That's really the mentality is, you know, see, when I was a kid, and if we wanted to pretend we were somebody else, we put on underoos and we danced around the yard, right? Today, when people want to be someone else, what they do is they force everyone else with laws into their delusion. You know? And so...
Yes.
You see where I'm...
I agree. Yeah, I agree. That at the civil... Right. They take... they're taking matters that have nothing to do with civil rights and dressing it up in that language. And I'll go back also to, you know, using the word delusion. For some individuals, you're correct. It's a true delusion. They think they are something or someone they are not. But I also want to hit on the fact that, again, you mentioned trauma. And trauma, in that case, you know, it's not a choice. Even when if it's a delusion or trauma, it's not a choice in the sense of, oh, let me figure out what I'm going to wear today. You know, that kind of, no pun intended there. And sometimes, like, especially when you're dealing with young children, it's something, so it can be family dynamics, it can be parent dynamics that lead to misperceptions in the child, but they're just going to outgrow. The vast majority, over 85%, will outgrow their gender confusion if we help them through puberty.
When I was a kid, we called girls who liked to play with the boys more than girls, we called them tomboys. And then usually by the time they were 12 or 14, they started growing breasts and whatnot, and they went, oh, I'm a girl, and then they changed. You know,
and
now you say, oh, well, you must really be a boy in a girl's body. Here's some drugs.
Yeah. That's what it's come down to. And even in the example of tomboys, most tomboys, they may persist in their preference for stereotypical male behavior or applications. But they know they're girls. They know they're women when they get older, right? So stereotypes do not determine whether you're a boy or a girl or a man or a woman. But that's what this transgender movement has essentially, it's essentially pushing that, just as you say. It's crazy. You know, we went through the 70s with the feminists fighting the sex stereotypes, right? And now we have this transgender movement that's embracing them and trying to force all of us into them. It's insane.
Well, and if you notice, like, the feminists always attack everything that's feminine, and all of the feminists, they sit there bashing on masculinity, but they all look so much like men. You know, I mean, they're most, the most unattractive women that are usually, you know, if you look at, and I posted something on this yesterday, if you look at right-wing pundits, they're usually very attractive. If you looked at left-wing pundits, they're very unattractive, and, you know, and they try to look like men, and it's just, you know, it's shocking. So why are they promoting sexual confusion to children who don't even know what sex is and haven't even reached puberty?
Well, the claim the line that the activists use is that, well, we were born transgender and we suffered so much and we suffer still because we can't pass as the opposite sex. If someone had helped us as children, we never would have developed our true sex characteristics and we would pass so much better. And then we would not have our depression and suicidal tendencies.
Even though like 48% of transsexual people who have sex changes commit suicide, and it's somewhere in the 40s, I think. It's pretty high.
Right. And the most important study is the one out of Sweden that followed. It followed transsexual people who had gone through hormones and surgery for 30 years after their transformation and found the suicide rate, even post-surgery and post-hormones in Sweden, which is super affirming, their suicide rate 19 times greater than the general population. So, again, science does not support their claims. But that's what they could, you know, if you repeat a lie often enough, it is believed as the truth. And so essentially they're targeting young, vulnerable children and vulnerable adolescents, and they're ruining lives. They are ruining lives. And parents need to be aware of what's going on, because this isn't only happening in like New York City and Hollywood. Okay. It's ubiquitous across the country. If your children go to public schools, if your children go to private schools, you need to be proactive and find out what's happening in those buildings relative to transgender, gender identity, so-called safe schools programs. It's coming in under anti-bullying, and parents need to be proactive in protecting their children.
Yeah, my son is in a school that is staunchly against that. Thank goodness we just started him in a new school this year, and he's much, much happier. He was in the local public school system, and we put him in a Christian school this year, and suddenly his grades and happiness and everything jumped way up, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was just, all he did was complain about how stupid all the other kids were. So, here in California, our governor, Jerry Moonbeam Brown, has signed into law this year stating that health professionals can be jailed for using the incorrect pronoun. How does this irrationality attack even the ability to properly treat people in hospitals in an emergency situation?
Well, in terms of using the wrong pronoun, a law that will jail physicians for using the wrong pronoun clearly is a way to silence us and intimidate us into not speaking the truth about sex and gender identity, right? Now, related to that, if they were to require us to think about people and treat them medically as their gender identity rather than in accordance with their sex, that's utterly ridiculous. If I get, and I'll give you an example, if I were, even as a pediatrician, I would do gynecologic exams on, you know, pap smears, for example, look at the cervix of teenage girls, particularly, you know, if they were sexually active. So if I have a teenage girl, or another physician has an adult woman who is sexually active but believes she is a man, I have to treat her as the girl or the woman she actually is, because her cervix needs to be examined. Just because she thinks she's a man doesn't mean she suddenly loses risk of developing cancer of the cervix, right? I mean, this is utterly...
Delusional.
Talk about the dark age. To insist that...
You just said the dark age.
Dark ages.
We are... I just posted last week that we are now entering in the dark ages. This is the...
This is
the era where the light of truth does not reach, you know?
It's the most basic... Our sexuality, the fact that human beings reproduce sexually and are binary, this is the most basic truth of our human nature. So You eliminate that, it's all up for grabs.
Yeah, you know, reality doesn't exist. It's primacy of consciousness. Whatever you believe is reality. And then you force your delusion on everybody else. They don't actually exist in reality. They're just figments of your imagination, and you're going to push your imagination on them and then tell them how bad they are for not believing in your imagination.
Right.
So let's talk about these puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. What happens with these things?
Sure. Well, the first thing I always point out is puberty is not a disease. Seems obvious, right? Whoa. So here we go. We have biologically healthy children who psychologically, so let's say they're like 8 years old, 8-year-old children who psychologically, for whatever reason, are deeply upset by their biological sex and feel better believing they're the opposite sex. So the current medical wisdom is that to help these prepubertal children, you know, they're right on the cusp of puberty, to alleviate their anxiety, we need to put them on dangerous drugs to block puberty. Lupron is the most common medication used. It is not FDA approved for this use because puberty is not a disease. And there also are no studies, you know, but it doesn't matter that there are no rigorous long-term studies to tell us what giving Lupron to healthy, physically healthy children will do. We do know that there are side effects to Lupron based on its use in children with puberty that comes on too early. For kids who start puberty, let's say at age 5, they can be put on Lupron appropriately so that they will enter puberty at the right time, let's say around 11, 12, 13. Now, as those kids grow up to adulthood, a small percentage of them, if they're girls, will have severe brittle bones and will suffer bone fractures that normally only postmenopausal women will. If it's boys who were treated for early onset puberty, as they grow into young adult men, they, a small percentage, do have a higher incidence of testicular cancer and obesity. But these are risks that are known, that are told to families up front, and that physicians are on the lookout for. Not the case when it comes to gender-confused children. Lupron is also FDA approved for use in grown men to fight prostate cancer and in grown women to treat endometriosis, which is a painful condition of the uterus and other reproductive organs. When it's used appropriately in men and women, they suffer memory problems. Hey, you know, that's what our kids need, a potential for memory deficit.
I'll just mention very quickly the ketogenic diet, and we see how the low-fat diet has dramatically impacted people's memory and cognitive functioning, as well as all of the wheat and everything, which is high in gluteomorphine and this type of stuff. But, you know, if your brain and reproductive system are made out of 77% cholesterol, why are they telling us to eat a low-cholesterol, low-fat diet? Now, it doesn't take a whole lot of rocket science there to figure out something's wrong with that, and your liver can only produce about 10% of what the body needs. So why are we starving our brains and reproductive systems with the very chemicals that they need, and then pouring in soy on top of that, high in phytoestrogens? You know, and nobody's looking at the low-fat, low-cholesterol, high-soy diet as the culprit in all of this stuff, including the phytoestrogens and whatnot in plastics. So what do you say about buzzwords like transphobic, et cetera? You know, they always create an ad hominem attack to name call at anybody who addresses this stuff. So right now all of the trans people are screaming, they're transphobes, as they're watching this show. What do we say to this ludicrous name-calling sandbox stuff?
I'm not, you know, I think we have to say, look, we're not transphobic, we're trans-loving. We actually believe that there are two points, right? We believe, you can't be trans anything if you don't believe there isn't a left and a right, an up and a down, a male or a female.
Right. So you have to transition between the two.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. But honestly, we won't be able to really change the minds of the hardcore activists. But with those folks who are on the fence, they need to understand, you know what? We really do love people, children and grown adults, who are struggling with their gender identity. And please understand, I mean, this is what where I will get some, particularly when I'm talking about children, puberty blockers together with the cross-sex hormones, we're sterilizing kids as young as 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. We're sterilizing them permanently with that combination, that Lupron plus a cross-sex hormone. And the cross-sex hormones by themselves, I mean, the child will have to boot. If the child is going to impersonate the opposite sex for a lifetime, that means they're on these toxic hormones for a lifetime. Heart disease, diabetes, stroke, cancers. These are not benign things. This is child abuse. When I explain it that way, people are immediately say, yeah, it is child abuse. And they will also say, you know, most folks, regardless of where they are on the political spectrum, I have found are libertarian when it comes to adults. You know, they'll say, all right, an adult can hear out these risks and, hey, if they want to do that to their bodies, fine.
Just 5-year-old doesn't get it yet, you know.
Right. And neither does a teenager.
Well, you know, and if you look at the face value of what you just said, it sterilizes them. Okay. Doesn't take a whole lot for me to figure out what eugenics is.
Exactly.
And if you promote this behavior, and I showed the Jaffa memo earlier, and you realize that they're promoting homosexuality, and what is their ultimate goal? To attack family, to wipe out families, which is the backbone of society. And, you know, if people aren't reproducing. I mean, they might think they're evolving, but here's a news flash for those of you who out there who think that. If you don't have offspring to continue on your genes, you're out. You're out of the gene pool. You're done. That's what the Bible calls damned. So, you know, it's just, you know, to put it simply, all of your ancestors succeeded up until you. So, you know, and you're out. You're done. That's it. You know, so you didn't make it. And thanks for the support, Jamie and others who have hit the support, the Super Chat button and donated. There's also a Patreon button up at the top. Much appreciated for the support. Can you, and let's go back to this Dr. Money guy. Can you talk about the invention of sex reassignment surgery?
So Dr. Money was a longtime sexologist at Johns Hopkins University. As I said, he was one of the first to use the word gender. He was one of the first to inject gender into the medical literature and with this new invented definition of an internal sex identity. He also sexually abused his patients, but, you know.
You mean like Kinsey?
Correct, yeah. So he was right in line with Alfred Kinsey's, with Kinsey's whole sexual agenda. And his most famous, Dr. Money's most famous or infamous case was a little boy, David Reamer, who unfortunately, I want to say around 18 months, It was a later circumcision that was botched, and Money convinced the parents that they should raise David as a girl, and he was one of twin boys. And to make a long story short, he suffered tremendously. He and his brother were abused by money in the process, without the parents' knowledge, of course. And as a teenager, young adult, David, after struggling for years with his own gender identity, learned the truth and immediately and said he always knew that he couldn't have been a girl, went on to live as a man. I believe he did marry, and but sadly could never get past the whole trauma of that process and died by suicide. Money was finally shut down in 1979 by Dr. Paul McHugh, who was at that point the chief of psychiatry. And it was Dr. McHugh who had ordered a review of the Johns Hopkins sex reassignment program.
You know, and I'll just point out that Johns Hopkins was one of those CIA's big MKUltra schools as well that I've exposed extensively over the years. If someone wants to cut off an arm or a leg for no reason, we consider them to have a mental issue. But what if someone wants to cut off their genitals?
Right. If someone wants to cut off their genitals or their breasts, are hey, more power to them. That is how society is supposed to react. You know, this isn't a sign of any sort of mental illness. It's not a sign of wanting to harm oneself. It's a sign that you were born in the wrong body. So no logic, no consistency, no medical science.
Now, you know, and we see this all the time in the last couple of years. It's just so obvious, again, that it's social engineering. But whenever you have a mom, and I saw you discussing this new case down in Texas, this father doesn't want, you know, the mom decided her little boy was a girl, and the father's like, this is absurd. And so they're actually saying the father is abusing the boy for not saying he's a girl, which is the exact opposite of reality. But, you know, how are they, I don't know. Can you talk on this whole issue?
So, unfortunately, what has happened is that, and I think we may have said earlier, it's an elite top-down
agenda.
Thank you. An elite top-down agenda. Right. There are many not only transgender activists, but also physicians, therapists, psychologists who may be transgender themselves or have loved ones who are transgender. So they are biased in a personal sense in that way. And we're also dealing with this transgendering of children, as I call it, is profitable. And so, unfortunately, that's part of the problem.
Do you notice?
Now, and they are the ones, these top elite physicians and therapists who are, you know, biased. They are the ones responsible. They get to dictate what standards of care are to medical schools, to hospitals. They're the ones who also educate the family justices, right?
And the justices aren't smart enough to look down and go, you know, this is a bunch of BS.
Right. So that's what. So I have received calls from desperate parents going through divorce, desperate parents, but just calls from across the country, in which the justices are favoring. So in the midst of divorce trials, are favoring the parent who wants to have the child on cross-sex hormones.
And these are prepubescent, like, six-year-olds. Now, another thing that, and I just wanted to add to this, and what's so obvious about this whole agenda is magically, anytime you have a child who wants to put on a dress, the news media manages to show up and make a big scene out of it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we have to promote this and make it mainstream now.
Right. So I would say from where I sit and work, most of the parents who engage us are just, they're desperate. They want to fight this. They want to protect their children. But then on the other side, there are also parents who suffer from their own psychological issues, and they're embracing this. They want their 5 minutes of fame. Because if you're a parent who, and look at the show I Am Jazz and just that family, which is on display. There are parents out there who want their 5 seconds of fame, and they feed off of this.
And they'll ruin their children's lives to get the fame and promote this hideous social engineering agenda. So, this may be, I think we're probably, for those who don't get this stuff, actually going to have to go into this, but does mutilating your body actually change your sex?
Of course not. No. So from fertilization, our sex chromosomes they get passed and imprinted into every single individual cell of our bodies. So and sex is ultimately determined by whether or not you have a Y chromosome. So if that embryo has a Y chromosome, that Y chromosome is present in every single cell of the body, every single organ system, right? Everything from the brain to the skin, not one exception. And there is not one drug or one surgery that can remove that Y chromosome. So you will never change from a male to a female. And conversely, if there's an embryo conceived without a Y chromosome, that embryo is going to develop female in every single cell, no exception. And there's no drug, no hormone, no surgery that will ever, ever change that throughout the person's life.
Dr. Catella, you're just transphobic. Oh,
sticks and stones. Tell it to the field of genetics.
Why do they always have to resort to name calling to make their arguments?
Right. Because they know they don't have the facts. And now, so it's all they can do.
Now, there are like 6,500 documented differences between men and women. You know, our brains are obviously very different. Men think more logically. Women typically think more emotionally. Even our sweat smells differently. I mean, you never see, well, I don't know about homosexual men, but you never see men going around sticking their noses in armpits, whereas that's very typical behavior for women, for instance, you know? And it's like, you know, this is how women bond with men and things like that, and, you know, going by the smell and the pheromones, et cetera. But, you know, so what are just a handful, and we're getting close to 45 minutes here. I don't know if you have to run, but what are just a handful of these 6,500 differences?
So that study in particular was looking at specifically at genes. So there are at least 6,500 shared genes between men and women that produce different proteins. They are expressed differently. So those genes do not translate into specific behaviors. They actually impact our physiology in every tissue, and for that reason will influence behavior. So it's not a one-to-one correlation, but it just proves that this binary, this sexual binary, is way more than just our reproductive organs. The fact that there are at least 6,500 genetic differences between men and women proves that we are different at the biochemical, the cellular, the biochemical level. Our hardware is different. Now, what we can and cannot do is more similar than it is different. But how we get there can differ. You know, for example, telling directions. You know, I will often joke that, you know, when someone invents an implantable GPS, sign me up. Right. But, you know, women, it's not that we can't figure directions out, But the way in which we process, the way in which we go about it, we are more likely to formulate the directions in terms of landmarks, sounds, and smells.
Right.
Whereas men are going to give you absolute direction.
Why and why is that? Men were hunters, and this is what, you know.
Well, it probably comes down, in this case, it probably does come down to the fact that the brain, I mean, this is ongoing speculation, but every brain cell in a man has a Y chromosome. Women's brains do not. That has an impact on how our brain cells end up being neurologically wired and so forth. So we can process that equally. We can process similar things. And here's an example.
Oh,
women, they're so emotional. Yeah, but differently. They express their emotions.
That's the point, though, you know?
Right.
Well, women need the emotion to raise our children. That's the idea. We need you coddling the children, you know? And the men need to be out there tracking the animal and knowing, okay, well, he went this way and that way, and, you know, and they're trying to track the and so they're going to give the directions.
Right. You can understand why on average, women will be more this way and on average, men will be more that way. You can see the complementarity and how this is beneficial to the young, beneficial to the family and to the foundation of society.
And life.
But I would say you also don't want to go overboard and use those differences.
Well, then it's not a sweeping generalization. They're strong averages, you know.
Right.
You know, men generally have larger physical bodies. Women are generally smaller, thinner, petiter.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not to say all women are smaller and more petite in general.
However, if you match a man and a woman with equal training and fitness, the man's muscle fibers are fundamentally different from the woman's. And even if they're matched for fitness and training, the man will outperform the woman in terms of strength and speed. Now, the woman might do better with fine motor and endurance, but again, there are certain biological differences that you can't erase.
Do you have time to answer any more questions, or do we need to wrap it up here?
Oh, I'm sorry. This time we'll have to wrap up right around here.
All right. Well, maybe we can have you back sometime. I'd like to have you back. You know, and we have plenty more to keep going on. I appreciate your time today, Dr. Cotella. And would you like to give out your website and any information so that people can reach out to you?
Sure. So I'm the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. You can visit our website, which is www.acpeds.org. I can be contacted through the website and spend some time on our site. We do deal with other issues. We want to support families and children. We want the best.
And I really appreciate what you're doing. You have a very important message in this fallen age of insanity. So much appreciated for that. I appreciate everybody who gave their support and donated to the show. Sign up for Patreon, etc. Logosmedia.com is the website. Thank you so much, Dr. Cotella, and look forward to having you back again sometime.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.